that we posted from Guacamaya shows that when the parents and their lawyers suggested that they should be able to enter the base, the 27th Battalion's base in Iguala, to see if there's any evidence there, to possibly conduct excavations or exhumations to see if they could find remains, there are internal memos to the same defense secretary, Cienfuegos, recommending that any detention cells that may be on the base be dismantled and removed, and that soldiers or the commander of the base explicitly refuse to allow the investigators to excavate or dig up the ground of the base.
Well, we want to thank you, Kate Doyle, for being with us, a senior analyst at the National Security Archive. We're going to link to your report at democracynow.org. Kate was speaking to us actually from Guatemala City in Guatemala. Democracy Now! Is currently accepting applications for a digital fellow. Learn more and apply at democracynow.org. Democracy Now! Is produced with Renee Fels, Mike Burke, Dina Guzder, Messiah Rhodes, Nermeen Sheikh, Maria Tarasena, Tammy Warrenoff, Tarina Nadura, Sam Alkoff, Tamari Astudio, John Hamilton, Robbie Karen, Hani Masood, Sanjit Lopez. Our executive director is Julie Crosby. Special thanks to Becca Staley, John Randolph, Paul Powell, Mike DeFilippo, Miguel Noguera, Rocky Grand, Dennis Moynihan, David Prude, and Dennis McCormick. Make sure to tune into our segments through the week leading up to the 20th anniversary of the U.S. invasion of Iraq. I'm Amy Goodman with Juan Gonzalez.
KBOO Community Radio holds open meetings concerning the operations and programming of KBOO in accordance with requirements of the Communications Act of 1934 and certification requirements of the Corporation for Public Broadcasting. Information about KBOO Community Radio's open meeting policy is available at our website at kboo.fm. Due to the temporary closure of in-station activity at KBOO, meetings will be conducted online via public video conferencing unless otherwise noted. A public link and phone number to attend the meetings are available on our website. The Development and Events Committee will meet on the third Monday of each month at 5:30 p.m. Please visit our website at kboo.fm to verify if a meeting is being held.
Tune in to KBOO's Multilingual Music Marathon on March 16th. Join us in paying homage to our planet's linguistic diversity through song and dance. We'll be showcasing music from around the world from 12 p.m. to 1:30 a.m. Again, that's KBOO's Multilingual Music Marathon, this Thursday, March 16th, starting at noon. You can hear all our other specials from this winter campaign by going to kboo.fm/thrills.
This is KBOO Portland.
And now, your daily volunteer-produced community newscast, the KBOO Evening News.
Coming up on the KBOO Evening News, a memo from the DA's office reveals Portland police neglect to investigate driving under the influence.
A year-round homeless shelter in Beaverton will soon become a reality.
And a court case in Texas could stifle abortion access everywhere in the United States.
Good evening. This is the KBOO Evening News for Wednesday, March 15th, 2023. I'm Michelle Coppola.
And I'm Josh Salem. Portland police have neglected to investigate drivers suspected of being under the influence. That's according to an internal memo from the Multnomah County District Attorney's Office. The memo alleges 1 in 5 impaired driving cases cannot be prosecuted due to officers' failure to, quote, perform any of the routine investigation expected, end quote. This includes performing a breathalyzer test and drawing blood. Prosecution of impaired driving often comes from car wrecks rather than from police stopping visibly impaired drivers. Adam Gibbs is senior deputy district attorney and author of the memo sent on February 1st. Gibbs noted an overall decline in the number of misdemeanor and felony cases statewide since before the pandemic. He attributed the decline to an overworked Portland police staff who, quote, aren't doing as much of the self-directed policing that we saw before the pandemic, end quote. Gibbs further tied a drop in shoplifting and other misdemeanor thefts to the reliance on an online reporting system for low-level property crime, which rarely triggers police investigation. A spokesman for the Portland Police Bureau echoed Gibbs' claims and added that officers would rather book an impaired individual without a complete investigation to prevent the driver from getting in a crash that night. OPB published Gibbs' memo on Monday. The same day, city officials released an annual report on traffic deaths, showing 2022 continued a trend of increased fatal traffic incidents. Both speed and impairment were listed as contributing factors to the record-matching number of deaths.
Mayor Lacey Beattie of Beaverton announced that the promised development of a new year-round homeless shelter in Beaverton is finally becoming a reality. At her State of the City address on Monday night, Mayor Beattie emphasized the importance of making housing a priority in the city and also commended the partnerships that secured most of the needed funding.
As your mayor, I want you to hear loud and clear that in Beaverton, we are committed to compassionate action to help people living outside get immediate social services and move along a path towards permanent housing. For far too long, a person in Beaverton experiencing homelessness had nowhere to go. Not anymore. Being a good regional partner means we're also part of the solution, which is why I'm glad to say we are very close to completing Beaverton's first year-round shelter. And with that last little bit of funding we need, it could be open by this time next year. Beaverton Shelter at 217 and Beaverton Hillsdale Highway will serve 60 adults. It'll be operated in partnership with Washington County and contacted through community service providers. Thank you to Senator Wyden and Senator Merkley and Congresswoman Bonamici for their partnership that brought $3 million of federal funding home to Beaverton, making this project a reality.
That was Beaverton Mayor Lacey Beattie. The Portland suburb has provided winter shelter for the last 5 years, but since the pandemic, the need for permanent housing in the area has become more urgent. Back in 2020, Metro voters approved new taxes to raise $2.5 million for homeless services. That was on top of a $652.8 million bond voted in to build more affordable housing back in 2018. Since that time, city officials in Beaverton have been working to secure a location for the shelter. The current proposed site will be in proximity to public transportation and will also have adequate space for housing services needed by unhoused residents.
The Oregon legislature is expected to approve a $200 million emergency outlay for housing for the homeless. Governor Tina Kotek proposed $130 million in state spending to deal with the houseless crisis on her first day in office. The legislature added $70 million to fill perceived gaps, primarily in rural areas. The package includes $55 million for landlord incentives and mass leasing programs, $33.6 million for rent assistance, and $25 million for homeless youth. The two bills authorizing the funding will be discussed in the State House today, with approval expected. Once the bills are approved by the Senate and signed by the governor, much of the funding could be available by the start of April, instead of the usual wait until July. Sybil Hebb is the Oregon Law Center's Legislative and Policy Advocacy Director. Hebb said, quote, "We still have more work to do, but this is a critical initial investment, and it is fantastic to see it moving quickly so there can be an impact right away."
Oregon State workers who are white and male earn more than workers of color and women. That's according to a pay equity study released on Tuesday. The study was commissioned by the Oregon Secretary of State's office, and it also shows that raises workers received in 2019 and 2022 to address pay inequity actually made the gap even larger for some employees. The report says that women working for the state of Oregon earn a base rate of 83 cents for every dollar earned by a man doing the same or similar work. People of color working for the state brought in 88 cents base pay for every dollar paid to white employees doing the same or similar jobs. The Oregonian reports that officials who oversaw the study say that women and people of color working for the state tend to have less experience than their white male colleagues. However, the report also strongly advises that the state, quote, must do more to address discrimination and other systemic issues which have contributed to women and people of color earning lower wages for the same or similar work. The study cites other reasons for the pay gap as well. They include a lack of opportunity for people of color and the added burden of childcare responsibilities, which are primarily borne by women.
This St. Patrick's Day, March 17th, will mark nearly 3 years since bars and restaurants across Portland were required by Governor Kate Brown to close their doors to in-person business. KABU reporter Owen Bastable recently talked with a Portland pub owner who shared reflections on St. Patrick's Day 2020 and how his pub survived this challenging time.
Well, you're very welcome into T.C. O'Leary's, one of the finest little Irish pubs in Portland, Oregon. I'm Tom, the owner, and we built this space so you can enjoy a nice bit of banter and a lovely few pints.
So that's Tom O'Leary, one of many bar and restaurant owners in Portland who needed to close their doors to in-person service in March of 2020. On March 23rd, 2020, Governor Kate Brown issued an executive order that kept Oregonians at home except to attend to essential tasks such as grocery shopping or urgent medical appointments. For many small businesses, this was a major blow that continues to impact how food and beverage services operate across the state. A lot has happened since March 2020, when COVID-19 restrictions almost overnight shuttered restaurants and bars across the city. As time passed, businesses started to erect pop-up tents, use space heaters, and rely on to-go orders to make ends meet. As the third anniversary of this event approaches, I talked with Tom O'Leary, owner of T.C. O'Leary's Irish Pub, located on 2926 Northeast Alberta, to learn more about his memories of this remarkable time and how his pub weathered the early days of a fast-spreading pandemic. Tom was preparing for this year's St. Patrick's Day, but reflected on the days leading up to St. Patrick's Day 2020.
We're gearing up for a St. Patrick's Day at T.C. O'Leary's now for this year. And in general, our expectation is we do 10 times the business that we normally do on an average day. So it's a huge undertaking. It's a marathon run every year. And we obviously, we bring on every staff member we have, we bring on everything around us, we design everything and spread it out as best we can so that we can take on that kind of business for one day a year. So my mind frame was that anyway in 2020. So the week beforehand, we've already booked everything. We've prepped food that's going to do those kind of numbers. We've brought in, as you see behind you today, there's what, 8 to 10 kegs of beer. We're going to be adding that again and a half, probably 30. We'll probably have 30, 35 kegs out here. And that's just going to get us through St. Patrick's Day. So it's a huge amount of push on that day. So having that mind frame, and as we came up to the 17th in 2020, say from the 13th, 14th, every day was a new set. So it was going from now we need to restrict the number of people inside your business to 75%. The following day was down to 50%. The following day, 25%. And I just remember the day before, which was the 16th, I think we were allowed, maybe it was only 10 people at a time. You weren't allowed to do anything else. No one was allowed to hang out here. If you wanted something from T.C. O'Leary's, you had to come to the door and we could hand it to you. You could not stick around. One of his best buddies, Jared, came in to me and just kept bullying me. Just kept saying, you know, you can use jam jars. You know that. There's no problem with that. It's legal. You can use a sealable jar to put beer in, because we know what's coming. And by late the 16th, the rule was put out there that we had to close T.C. O'Leary's for inside business. For any, actually, the only thing we were allowed to do was to go. That was it. The main door that was the door for the restaurant that used to be here, Branch Whiskey Bar, was the business. It was a glass door, so we took the glass out of it, we put wood into it, and then we cut it in half and made it a Dutch door, like a cottage door. And I wasn't really sure why, or what I was thinking it could be a fish and chip window that we could use specifically either very late at night or for lunches. I just wanted to play with the idea. And of course, it became incredibly important. From that day, which was St. Patrick's Day, which we still did about a quarter of our actual business. So we were still able to sell a lot of to-go food. We bought in cases and cases of 32-ounce and 16-ounce jam jars. We bought them from wherever we could get them. So we were able to fill the jars, seal the lid, and hand them out. And actually, Guinness held up really well in the jars. But anyone I was meeting at the window, and in some cases, they were customers who were living alone or, you know, didn't get out, weren't able to socialize or, you know. So it was that opportunity to even just meet them at the window and say, how you doing, and have a chat. And but over the coming weeks, etc., our customers, which in some cases were just aggressive with me to say, you do not close TC O'Leary's. You do everything you can to keep this open because it's important to the neighborhood. And that was the first time I got a sense of, and that was, as I say, that's 3 years ago. We were only 3 years in at that point, to say, yeah, we've got to do everything we can to keep our business open.
June 25th, 2021, Governor Kate Brown signed an executive order lifting the vast majority of Oregon's COVID-19 restrictions on businesses. As Tom prepares for another St. Patrick's Day in 2023, he is still trying to recapture the crowds, community, and profits he watched go away almost overnight 3 years ago. But he's confident the pub will be back full steam this year. For KBOO News, this is Owen Bastable reporting.
President Joe Biden issues an executive order to reduce gun violence. The EPA imposes the first federal limits on forever chemicals. And the North Carolina Supreme Court revisits a decision on gerrymandering. With more on these national stories, it's Catherine Carley with 2023 Talks.
Welcome to 2023 Talks, where we are following our democracy in historic times.
So let's finish the job. Ban assault weapons. Ban them again. Do it now. Enough. Do something. Do something big.
President Joe Biden called on Congress Tuesday to reduce the impact of gun violence on communities across the country. Speaking from Monterey Park, California, where a gunman killed 20 people last January, Biden announced an executive order meant to increase the number of background checks and promote safer firearm storage. EPA Administrator Michael Regan says his agency has proposed the first federal limits on what are known as PFAS, or forever chemicals, in drinking water.
These unregulated chemical compounds quickly became prominent in our everyday lives, propelled by the promise of a better life made easier, supposedly, by technology.
Now mostly phased out, PFAS chemicals have been tied to cancers, heart disease, and birth defects. The Justice Department will investigate last week's collapse of Silicon Valley Bank and the actions of its senior executives. Federal Reserve Chair Jerome Powell has also said his agency would investigate, but Senator Elizabeth Warren tells MSNBC Powell led the charge to weaken banking oversight.
He ran further than a lot of people even thought the law let him.
Warren contended the bank loaded up on risk to increase profits. The North Carolina Supreme Court has allowed a rare rehearing of a case which could lead to extreme gerrymandering of electoral districts. A previous court upheld district boundaries drawn by the courts just 3 months ago, but a new GOP court majority is revisiting the decision. Bob Phillips of Common Cause says the court got it right the first time.
What is happening today in the building behind us is completely unnecessary and frankly outrageous.
State lawmakers are promoting the so-called independent legislature theory, claiming states may regulate all elections with zero oversight from the courts or federal government. The Texas Senate has approved legislation to raise the penalty for voting illegally from a misdemeanor to a felony, sentencing those convicted to as much as 20 years in prison and more than $10,000 in fines. The state of Ohio is suing Norfolk Southern Railroad for recklessly endangering the health of residents following last month's hazardous train derailment. Ohio Attorney General Dave Yost says the railway's accident rate is up 80% over the past decade.
At least 20 Norfolk and Southern derailments since 2015 have included chemical spills.
And Republican lawmakers in South Carolina say a woman who gets an abortion should be eligible for the death penalty. A bill being considered would redefine person under state law to include a fertilized egg, giving it equal protection under the state's homicide laws. I'm Catherine Carley for Pacifica Network and Public News Service. Find our 8 trust indicators to support transparency and accuracy at publicnewsservice.org.
You're listening to the KBOO Evening News. Stay tuned after this newscast for a special rebroadcast of our interview with the Portland Psychedelic Society. At 6, it's Earth Riot Radio. At 6:30, it's Free Culture Radio. Then at 7, Culture in Motion with Mike Crenshaw. Tonight's weather will be cloudy, with an overnight low of 38. Tomorrow's weather will be sunny, with a high temperature reaching 58. Today in history in 1920, Seattle doctor E. Donald Thomas was born. He won the Nobel Prize in 1991 for his role in developing cell and organ transplantation. He also developed bone marrow transplants as a treatment for leukemia with his wife and research partner. The quote of the day is from Supreme Court Justice Ruth Bader Ginsburg, who was born this day in 1933. Ginsburg said, "Whatever you choose to do, leave tracks. That means don't just do it for yourself. You'll want to leave the world a little better for your having lived."
The State of the Tribes speech in Wisconsin called for more cooperation on health care, casino revenue, and protecting the environment. With that story and more, it's Antonia Gonzalez with National Native News.
This is National Native News. I'm Antonia Gonzalez. The leader of one of 11 federally recognized tribes in Wisconsin has delivered the annual State of the Tribes speech at the Capitol Building in Madison. The tribes are calling for more cooperation on healthcare, casino revenue, and protecting the environment. Chuck Kornbach of Station WUWM reports.
Robert Van Zyl is chairman of the Sacagan Chippewa community. One thing he told Wisconsin's governor and about 130 lawmakers is that tribes receive very limited funds from the federal Indian Health Services Program. Van Zyl says that makes it tough to hire and keep health care providers.
Wage pressure and difficulty recruiting medical talent, rural areas are really hurting and hindering quality care.
Van Zyl asks for a change in Wisconsin law that would allow nurse practitioners to work without supervision from physicians. On gaming, Van Zyl calls for more state regulation and consumer protection related to gambling machines at non-tribal taverns. He also asks for tribes to be able to keep more revenue from their casinos and share less with the state, allowing tribes to invest in diversifying their economy.
For our tribes to make strides toward economic self-sustainability, we must diversify our economic engines beyond casino revenue.
Van Zyl also requests that Wisconsin officials let tribes add their expertise to battling contamination from so-called forever chemicals known as PFAS that may threaten many fish. He says the pollution may hurt the Wisconsin tradition of Friday night fish fries.
Might just require a Mr. Yuck sign sticker to prevent people from poisoning themselves.
Wisconsin is sitting on a growing state budget surplus, but Republicans controlling the legislature have warned that Democratic Governor Tony Evers is proposing too much spending. How that battle plays out this spring could affect calls for more state-tribal cooperation. I'm Chuck Kornbach.
3 Alaska Native mushers were the first to finish the Iditarod Tuesday. Ryan Reddington crossed the Burled Arch in Nome just after noon. He finished the 1,000-mile sled dog race from Anchorage to Nome in 8 days, 21 hours, 12 minutes, and 58 seconds. Pete Kaiser of Bethel came in and about an hour and a half later, followed by Richie Deal of Aniak. Reddington is Inupiat, Kaiser Yupik, and Deal Denina Athabaskan. Another Alaska Native, Mike Williams Jr. of Akiak, is still in the race. His father, Mike Williams Sr., was a Nome for the finish. Williams said he's proud to see not just one, but 3 Native mushers at the top.
It's a joy. It's something very special. 1, 2, 3. And it says a lot that mushing is still alive in our communities.
Williams, whose Yupik has run the Iditarod 15 times, he says he entered his first race in 1992 because the number of native mushers was in sharp decline, mainly because they could not afford to compete against a new class of well-financed professional mushers. Williams said the traditional use of dogs for hunting and trapping was key to survival and required a mastery of the land in one of the harshest environments on the planet. He says the Iditarod is a reminder of the culture behind the sport. Williams has also run many Iditarods with Ryan Reddington's grandfather, Joe, who founded the race. Although many members of the Reddington family have competed in the race, Ryan is the first to claim the trophy, which bears the image of his late grandfather. Mike Williams Jr. has about 150 miles to go before reaching Nome. I'm Antonia Gonzalez.
Six environmental groups are suing the U.S. Bureau of Land Management, the U.S. Fish and Wildlife Service, and the U.S. Department of the Interior in an effort to stop the Willow Oil Project in Alaska. The $8 billion project was requested by oil giant ConocoPhillips and is located on a portion of Alaska's North Slope, which is one of the last pristine wilderness areas in the country. The drill was initially approved by the Trump administration in 2020. The Biden administration okayed the drill request on Monday, and it is expected the drill will produce about 576 million barrels of oil over the next 30 years. According to the environmental groups filing the suit, the Willow Project will, quote, result in significant impact to the region's wildlife, air, water, lands, and people, end quote. The suit also states that federal officials approving the project failed to consider reasonable alternatives that would be less damaging to the area. Critics say that this approval undermines the president's claim that he is delivering the most aggressive climate agenda in U.S. history. However, Biden administration officials point to the fact that the Interior Department reduced the project in size from what was initially greenlit under President Trump. The president cited reasons for why he decided to move forward, including a global energy crisis, pressure from Alaska lawmakers, and complex legal issues surrounding the project.
The second biggest abortion case since Roe v. Wade just ended with no ruling yet. The case was a closely watched one in Texas and around the country. A coalition of anti-abortion groups sought to overturn federal approval of a widely used abortion pill, mifepristone. They wanted a Texas judge to grant a preliminary judgment ordering the FDA to revoke its approval of the pill. The federal judge overseeing the case, Matthew J. Kaczmarek, is a Trump appointee who has been critical of Roe v. Wade, marriage equality, and federal anti-discrimination protections for sexual orientation and gender identity. Kaczmarek has already drawn scrutiny for the way he's handled the matter to date. He took steps in delaying making the public aware that a hearing was scheduled in the case today. He said he wanted to avoid an unnecessary circus-like atmosphere. Legal experts have already stated this case should not have come to trial. There is no precedent for such a ruling, which might result in overturning the FDA's approval processes. The judge asked the plaintiffs if they could cite another similar case when a court intervened in the way he is being asked to do. They could not.
Lawyers for the anti-abortion groups and physicians who filed the suit claimed that the abortion pill was unsafe and that the FDA made mistakes when it was approved in 2000. They claimed that the FDA didn't adequately review the scientific evidence or follow proper protocols when it approved mifepristone, and that it has ignored safety risks of the medication ever since. Lawyers from the Department of Justice, which is representing the FDA, cited evidence that the medication is extremely safe. They argued the FDA has regulated mifepristone more strongly than many other drugs. The agency has an extra framework of restrictions and monitoring for the drug called a risk evaluation and mitigation strategy, which has been used for only about 300 other medications. They also say the plaintiffs don't even have any legal standing to file the lawsuit because they couldn't show the FDA approval had caused them harm. The hearing was the first public session in a case that could have far-reaching consequences even in states where abortion is still legal. In states where abortion has been banned or even restricted, women often order the pills from overseas or travel to other states to get them. A preliminary injunction would temporarily cut off access everywhere in the United States. The judge referenced the Dobbs v. Jackson Women's Health Organization decision multiple times and suggested it could have an impact on his thinking about the current case. He said he would issue an order and an opinion, quote, as soon as possible, end quote.
Well, KBOO News poet Dan Raphael is back, and this time he's investing in spring.
Spring is coming. Sabers are rattling. Banks are failing. No one agrees on which way the economy is going. No one's talking of corruption, price gouging, or puppet masters. In these days of global electronic finance, you can't even follow the money. Media colluding to misdirect our unease. Trust the powerful. Be fearful of everyone, including yourself. We broke the planet, and now we must fix it. First, we must stop making it worse. Us rich nations need to use much less, not just substitute electric for gas, and everyone needs to make fewer babies. Any week now, the temperature will rise 30 degrees, and all that mountain snow comes flooding down. But right now, the sun's shining, blossoms popping out in soil and on plants. We need more spring in our government, more open blossoms in our economy, more acknowledging our interconnections with the planet and the ecologies we couldn't live without. For Poetic Justice, this is Dan Raphael.
You're listening to the KBOO Evening News for Wednesday, March 15th, 2023. This is a volunteer-produced newscast, and we encourage your participation. Call or text us with your breaking news, stories, and tips at 971-245-2158. Our production team for tonight's newscast includes Owen Bastable, Reed Johnson, Michelle Coppola, Josh Salem, and Dan Raphael. The producer is Althea Billings, and our engineer is Ray Bodwell. Special thanks to Catherine Carley and Antonia Gonzalez. The director of the Evening News is Althea Billings. A podcast of this newscast is available on our website at kboo.fm/eveningnews. You are listening to KBOO Portland on 90.7 FM, K282BH Philomath on 104.3 FM, and K220HR Hood River on 91.9 FM. I'm Josh Salem.
And I'm Michelle Coppola. All of our KBOO programs, including the Evening News, are supported by our members, great people just like you. If you'd like to become a member and support our programming, you can go to KBOO.com.